they chased their answers, travelers through time and space, stopping anywhere long enough to learn, but briefly enough to escape involvement. The light in the distance grows brighter, even as the surroundings grow ever more bizarre. Questions grow darker, answers more involved, until reality itself becomes an academic concept, fit only to be dissected over a pleasant cup of tea.
Welcome, welcome, brothers and sisters, to Pagan Chaos Magic, episode 20.5. I said the next episode, 21, was going to be the intro to Chaos Magic, and brothers and sisters, I have already thrown away at least 6 hours of audio, two serious attempts to do this, and realized, hitting the wall, that it was not working, and when it does not work, one thing I have learned is, be patient. Something needs to happen. You need to understand something before you go forward. And that something finally hit. And I realized I really need to make a point before I start, you know, laying out what I see as explaining all about chaos magic, constructing a tradition that can be used as a reference, can be used exactly, can be modified, can be changed to suit one's taste, but is a framework to work from. And I realized something had to be said first, though, about the seriousness of playing with magic. I mean, a recent incident occurred which drew my attention to something that's been bothering me. It's hanging out in the back of my mind, but I was assuming, having just so recently gone from being solitary to doing more work with people, actually doing any work with people, that maybe it was I hadn't been in the culture long enough. Maybe I was seeing shortcomings were magnified in some aspect that I didn't have the wisdom to see yet, but there were certain things that were bothering me. A rather serious episode happened recently. I'm not going to go into the details of who it was, where it happened. I'm just going to express shock at the reaction of the pagans to what happened. There was a public ritual. We'll leave it at that. I'm not going to dither about the particulars, gods or goddesses chosen, and the manner in which the ritual was held. Because that's just quibbling about details. And it's not my right to say whether or not you've picked... It's not my right to say whether or not you've picked a correct god, goddess, representation. It is all particular to you. However, if you're in a public ritual and you are leading the ritual and you are stating publicly that the ritual is for purpose X, you conduct the ritual. People are giving and directing their energies toward your goal, toward the ritual you are leading, toward your ultimate expression of intent. And then afterward, when the person who has led the ritual admits that there was a secret meaning to the ritual, which was actually Y, and Y not resembling X at all, that's a serious violation. That is a very serious violation. Now, I hesitated to use the word, but I spoke with a few friends of mine who have been good pagan friends for many years, because I needed a sounding board. And the first two people I spoke with, one was my wife, and another was a very good friend of mine. And the word they used was spiritual rape. So I don't really feel that that's a matter of hyperbole. They believe that if you're going into a ritual with a stated purpose, and then there is a secret purpose not revealed to you until afterward, that is a form of spiritual rape. Well, I can't say I disagree with them. I'm afraid that if you have found yourself in that kind of position, I would never work with that person again in magic. Now, I'm not going to say anything more about that. The second part bothers me even more. There were a few more serious magical practitioners who had a lot of problems with the ceremony to begin with, but when that went down, basically, you know, blew their top. I can't say I wouldn't have done the same in their place. But the reaction of the people who had been involved in the ritual blows me away. Their reaction to finding out that the real stated purpose of the ritual was why, and when they found out just how serious and potent why was, why in many ways being opposed to the stated purpose of X, simply shrugged it off and said, well, you know, it's just a ritual. Okay, I don't want to keep being the bad guy here, pointing fingers and telling people that they're, you know, a bunch of idiots, but if you're a person who will accept that with a shrug and it's just a ritual, please get the hell out of occultism. If the dressing up and the play acting, you know, feed something within you, I suggest maybe cosplay conventions, comic cons, you'll meet a lot of people into it. Get out of magic. It's too dangerous. The gods and goddesses, whether or not you choose to believe in them as abstractions or actual beings, whatever, they get really, really pissed off when they think people are play-acting in their name. I'm going to read something that I've read once before, but it's so applicable to the situation that I've got to do it one more time. It's from Peter Carroll's book, Cyber Magic, Advanced Ideas in Chaos Magic. Chapter 23, Heresy 4, Elitism. Our ancient Celtic ancestors said, "Never give a sword to a man who cannot dance." We might well add, "Never give a wand to anyone who cannot handle ordinary reality." Magic will tend to amplify whatever tendencies a person has. It will increase general incompetence in life just as readily as it will augment competence. Although we have seen those who started off reasonably well organized and have made a magnificent success of their lives with magic, we have observed plenty of unpromising cases taking a powered nosedive to disaster with occult assistance. The causality list has grown considerably since we wrote the above. Magic doesn't suit everyone. Only those prepared to take full responsibility for themselves should apply. The rest should find themselves the cheapest and most benign source of outside guidance. Commentary 23. The best orders and the best books on magic make the neophyte work very hard to gain anything. For, in brutal fact, nothing of any value comes from involving people who do not pursue excellence for its own sake in magic. Magic does not offer an escape from ordinary reality. Rather, it offers a full-on confrontation with it, which one could easily lose. So before I lay out some rituals that you can use and modify as you wish, before you start tampering with your destiny and your life with magic. I suggest you take the consideration of, is it for you? Now, some have it thrust upon them. You know, it occurs, the famous shamanic initiation, which more often in the little records we have is often thrust on an unwilling participant as it is chosen. If you're not willing to understand the forces you're playing with, if you're not spending the time to understand there's no such thing as just a ritual, if you don't have the level of seriousness to perceive that when you tinker with your life at a magical level, real things happen in your life. Real change happens. Scary change sometimes. Very often unexpected change when you're new and inexperienced. Do not approach magic lightly. Do not participate in rituals with secret meanings hidden from you. Do you understand the consequences? You are lending your spiritual energy toward a magical goal that is actually a lie, and that energy is hijacked for some secret purpose, and you care not? Get thee out of magic. You are not a pagan. You are not a magician. You are a dabbler and a dilettante. And please get out before you hurt yourself. Just a ritual. Please, for your own sake, understand, if you're going to practice magic, things will happen. This is not a TV show. This is not fantasy land. As I said, there's plenty of places to go explore that if that's your thing. And hey, everybody likes the masquerade at Convocation on Saturday night. It's one of the heights of the event. You know, people work for a year sometimes on their costuming before they get there. Everybody gets a little wild and fun with it. But that's just a piece of the culture. If you're a pagan who practices magic, who claims to work with the gods, and you're willing to shrug off something like that as just a ritual, then I say you are no pagan. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings. But get out before you get hurt. Now, if you are prepared to look reality in the eye and to know thyself, even all the parts that hurt and all the parts that make you ashamed and all the parts that bring you joy and all the parts that make you proud, if you're not willing to take a good, long, hard look at you and the universe around you and take it seriously, don't start playing with the knobs. Okay, now I've stated my piece, and now I'm going to play a piece of music that'll take me down a peg or two, like it usually does. This is a piece by Ani DiFranco that some of you have probably heard before. A lot of people, this is the one tune they've heard. There's a story behind it. As the story on the street goes, I don't know how exactly true it is. If you remember a singer by the name of Suzanne Vega, singer-songwriter, who hit big in the, I believe it was the either late 80s or early 90s, with an album, I can't remember the title, 99.5 Degrees, I think it was. My Name is Luca was a big hit off of it. She apparently was friends with Ani when they were young. They were both young female singer-songwriters. And Ani chose the path of, screw the labels, I'll do this myself and sell it out of the back of my car and do shows, and I will not surrender my copyrights to anybody else. I'll build my own studio and do it my way, and she did. She's very successful now. Now, her friend, Suzanne Vega, took the opposite route. She went the corporate route. And found herself afterward, like so many musicians who sign up with the major labels, kind of screwed over. And apparently called Ani to whine about it at some point, and Ani wrote this song as kind of a cathartic response, I suppose. It's called Napoleon. And it's all about how everybody wants to be a fucking Napoleon. Everybody wants to achieve. Everybody wants to be proven for what they're worth. And I find it particularly apropos, considering I'm trying to explain, how I think magic works. Here, look, here's the occult secrets of the universe explained by Kaya Dragon. For free! Yeah, I guess I'm one of those Napoleons. I guess I'm one of those who'll stand up and just state what he's thinking, and what I'm thinking is, if you're not serious about your magic, get out now. If you're serious about changing whatever you want to change in your life, if you want the power to surf the waves of reality instead of having them dash you against the beach, if you want the power to improve your quality of life, notice I said power, not necessarily the skill. Whatever tools you decide to embrace, whatever pantheon, whatever worldview, pantheism, animism, ritual magic, ceremonial magic, shamanism, rolling dice, casting cards, reading runes, whatever you decide to do, take it seriously. I will say it to you again. Whatever you believe the gods to be, do not mock them by being less than serious. The consequences are not worth the fun you're deriving from the play acting. All right, here's some music. I'll talk about some other stuff on the other side.
Yes. took you for a ride. And I guess that you dialed my number, 'cause you thought for sure that I'd agree. I say, baby, you know I still love you, but how dare you complain to me.
So what's the big deal? Why have I been stalling on the Chaos Magic 101? It's hard to put together. Like I said, I've been waiting for further information to come my way. I'll know when it happens. That much is very true. Part of it has already happened. I recently finally got to catch up on some podcasts. I had about a week at work where I had free programming time, and I can listen to podcasts while I'm typing away. And I caught up on episode 70 over at the Wigglian Way, and Mojo was interviewing Judy Harrow, an author and a very experienced lady in Wicca. She's written 3 books, Wicca Coven, Spiritual Mentoring, and Devoted to You. And she's also the High Priestess of the Proteus Coven. Wise lady. And I think part of where I've been having so much trouble was something that Mojo actually ended up mentioning. Mojo and Sparrow are forming their own magical group. You could listen to the Wigglian Way and get all the details on that. And the reason I mentioned that is during the interview, Mojo mentioned that, you know, how he was looking for a little bit of advice on how to deal with the idea that, okay, he is a leader in his group. As a leader, there are moments that he deals with the idea of, who am I to be saying this? What authority have I to teach, to tell somebody this is the way it is? From where comes my authority? And obviously he's able to overcome that. But she called it something very interesting I never heard of before, and after listening to this very intelligent lady, I know I'm going to have to read her books, whether or not I'm Wiccan. She called it imposter syndrome. It's not uncommon to people who are leaders or spokespeople. And I don't think I'm either, but I am a guy sitting in front of a microphone talking about what I believe. And occasionally we have moments of, well, what are you saying? Why are you saying it? Well, two reasons. Give my kids a window into their old man's brain when they're older and wonder what was all that craziness about. And two, because I'm compelled to. It's a deal I made. Speak my mind. So, like Mojo, I guess I'll just have to get past it sometimes. And I'll know when it hits right. So between the reminder of the seriousness of a magical undertaking, and a reminder to myself to make sure I've got it right. So when I speak of something, it is, to the best of my knowledge and ability, the truth as I see it. Sometimes that's harder than it sounds. Anyways, before I, you know, go on explaining anymore, I'm just going to play a little bit more music. I'm going to do a Journal of the Dragon Sun and wrap it up. Why I've been slow on the podcast, I'm not pod-fitting, folks. I really don't ever plan to. If the day comes where I get a big message that says it's time to stop talking, I will. But I plead 6 and 7 day weeks, 70-hour weeks, and highly stressful 70-hour weeks. Sorry, folks. Right now I'm an extremely tough project, but it is making, well, a lot of overtime, which my primary function in life is providing for my family, and that's absolutely needed right now. So I get these in as I can. As it is right now, I'm back on the night shift. I've actually switched back and forth between days and nights 4 times in the last month and a half, and finally gotten them to agree to just settle on a shift. So I'm still awake right now, because this is usually when I'm winding down or leaving work. Child's asleep, my wife is asleep, and I have a few moments. And there'll be moments in the future, but it may take a little while. Let me get you something good, not just something. When I speak, I want it to be from a place of authenticity, as best as I understand it. And when I'm not quite getting it right, I can tell. And I'm not going to put that out there. It's not worth your time. There's many, many, many other incredibly great podcasts that you can absorb between. So many good ones. I mentioned The Wiggly and Way. There's a cool one that I finally got a chance to listen to, Secrets in Plain Sight with Iden Odinson. Wow, cool. He reminds me from, I was one of those weird kids who, when, you know, I went to the Kingdom Hall, which was the Witness Church, I was one of the kids who used to hang out with the old folks and listen to the stories, because there was always a level of experience I was getting from them. It was a vibe of understanding that I didn't get from the younger people. You know, I still had friends who were my age, and I wasn't so set apart as to not have friends, but I really enjoyed my time with people who were older than me and were offering me their view on life after having lived it and had some experience. And Iden's been around, and Secrets in Plain Sight, he has embraced his way, and he's great to listen to. It reminds me, you know, he is definitely my spiritual elder, and I appreciate his insights. There's so much new stuff. I've heard Inciting a Riot is a fantastic podcast, and I haven't had a chance to catch it yet, but it's on the list. Spirits Cast is back. She's back. She's feeling good. She's podcasting. There's so many other good ones. There's just so many good podcasts out there. Druid Cast, Edge of the Circle, Infinite and Beyond. I could go on and on, and I'm leaving so many people out. Pagan Parents on the Edge. Head on over to podcastalley.com. And do a search in religion and spirituality if you want to find just a huge list of quality, voted for, vetted pagan podcasts and magical podcasts. We easily, as pagans and as occultists, overwhelm the amount of monotheistic podcasts, which I find very interesting. But yeah, there's going to be some delays. I'm not podfading. I'm just going to be gone for a little while. I've got to pay the Piper. The Piper requires that I work to pay him right now. And that's fine, because the end result is I've accomplished the goal, which is restoring my family's finances and having the cushion that is just required to live day to day without, you know, living in a state of anxiety and panic. So that's what I got to focus on. And on the in-betweens, I promise to put out the best quality stuff I can. And I've got some good stuff in the works. Let me just get this right before I hand it to you. Speaking of Mojo and the Wigglian Way, this is one of Mojo's earlier musical projects, Chalice and Blade, and Pay the Piper. This is one of the tunes that's holding me up these days when I'm feeling weary and have the occasional opportunity to plug my headphones in on the in-betweens and play some tunes to get my mind hit straight. Thanks, Moj. This is a great piece to you and your lovely female vocal accompanist that I cannot remember the name of, and I hope she forgives me if she were ever to hear this. Talk to you in a minute. Speaking of tunes that are holding me up these days, I want to play another one. This is The Song of Owen by Dave the Bard from Hearn's Apprentice. One more tune holding me up when it is painful to be standing. Well, I want to close episode 20.5 of Pagan Chaos Magic with a journal to Dragon Son, my son. My son, you're coming up soon on 3 years old, a couple of months. And, well, the changes in you are fascinating to watch. Not just from the standpoint of a new parent, but from the sometimes uncomfortable standpoint of seeing a reflection of myself that isn't always the most settling thing. Now, when you hear me talk in the podcast about being tired or feeling kind of beat up or working hard, that's unfortunate side effect of the work I chose. And I did choose it when I was young, in a misguided attempt to fulfill somebody else's idea of what my future should be. And I'm not entirely sure it was misguided. I may not like my work very much, but it has allowed me to pretty much keep things from totally crashing, getting enough work at a high enough rate of pay to maintain the family with a little outside assistance. But I never ever thought I was going to have any children when I chose this career. And it's not on purpose that I'm spending so much time away. I can tell you're missing me, because you've gone from being a little bit frustrated and competing for attention with your mother, which is really rather amusing to watch. You used to get quite angry and interrupt me constantly and shout when I came near for about 3 or 4 months. And I think I realized it had a lot to do with the fact that while I was always home while being unemployed, and you did not like it when I spent more than 5 or 10 minutes talking with your mother. Which, one of the great and wonderful things about your mother is we can talk for hours and never really cross the same subject twice. It's one of the greatest blessings to have in a mate. And, well, now that I've been working so many hours and not seeing very much of you, you're starting to miss me a little bit. And as your mama puts it, you're jonesing for some papa time. So tonight, you know, Sunday night, mention, you know, hey, you know, you were making a lot of noise. Let's go play in the other room together and let your mama talk on the phone, because she was trying to talk with a friend. And you were very insistent for attention. And when you heard that we were going to play, you just brightened up and, I'm going to go play with Papa. And you grabbed two of your favorite toys and went off to the bedroom so we could play with the trucks on the mattress and jump. You could jump up and down and make caves underneath the blankets and have the Papa truck and the baby truck talk to each other and have the Papa truck pull the baby truck out from the spot where he's stuck and all those cool things that kids do. And you do. And I enjoyed every second of it. Every moment of reading those two books to you. Even when you wanted the one two times. And never ever think that I regret any amount of effort it takes. Or any amount of pain and suffering required to be the best provider I can for you, and to be the best dad I can. And that's going to be hard sometimes, because the nature of my work is project based, and there are just times and projects like the one I'm on now where they're nightmares and they devour your time, and I have no choice but to work. I don't have the option to say no. If I do, I'll never be called on another project again and likely booted from the one I'm on. So I guess, son, I'm trying to say
always understand that no matter how rough the road getting here was, no matter how difficult the steps in my life have been, no matter how painful, no matter how traumatic things in my past may have been, no matter how tough it is being a good dad, or at least trying to be a good dad, no matter how many hours I need to work, no matter what I gotta do, son,
it's all worth it.
Every bit of it.
It's all worth it.
No matter how topsy-turvy it gets, no matter how frustrating it can be trying to be a good dad, no matter how difficult the work gets, I have never, ever been this happy. I don't need anything but you and your mom. I don't need riches. I don't need fame, says the guy talking into a microphone. But I do need you and your mom. And I love you very much. And you're coming up on 3. And son, I've just turned 41. So your mom and I have agreed to have more than one child. And we're working on a baby brother or a baby sister for you right now. That's not always that easy. Especially when you have a child running around the house. And one of the parents is working extremely long hours. It's not as easy as it was the first time. But never think that you were a burden in any way. Never, ever, never think for one moment I regretted becoming a father. Never think for an instant that I wanted to turn back, or that I decided that it wasn't worth it. You know, it's tough being a dad, as you will probably find out. But any dad, it's tough. Rich or poor, young or old, it's always different than you think it's going to be. And once you're in it, son, you're stuck in. And I mean that in the best way. The expression being stuck in is to be fully in. 100%. There's no going back. There's this life that you're responsible for raising for the next several years, and doing whatever you can to make sure you give them the best start. And sometimes that is such a poorer start than you ever imagined. But you do the best you can, son. And enjoy your time with your children. There is no better surcease of pain that comes along with earning a living than being with the ones you're earning a living for. So many parents, both of them have to work. We're trying really hard, son, to let your mom stay at home with you, at least for the elementary years, and homeschool you and your siblings as they come. And if we can pull it off, we're going to keep doing that. If we can't, we can't. And there's no sin in it. I don't think any less of two-parent household. Excuse me. I don't think any less of two parents working than one. I personally, me and your mother, want to try this way, and that means that, you know, there's not as much money to go around. Your mother did relatively well in what she did. She earned a nice income, and the loss of that income and my frequent unemployment over the last few years has been stressful, but and we've downgraded our lifestyle significantly, and that's okay. That's all right. I acknowledged that was going to be necessary from the moment I knew it was time, okay, to have kids. Remember, son, that if you don't achieve riches in the world, and you find yourself a family man anyway, that it is no sin not to be a rich father. It is a great sin to be a father who pays no attention, a father who doesn't spend the time he has with his child. Now, I don't have a lot of time right now, son, but there will be moments in the future where you and I will have a lot of time together, maybe for a few weeks at a time when I'm between projects. I love you. I love your mother. And I'm happier than I've ever been. Despite everything that's difficult, you're wanted. You're loved. You're really the best thing I've ever done in my life outside of marrying your mother. I love you, son. So, son, here's a little tricky pixie to rock you to sleep. I'm sure everybody thinks of the love of their life when they hear this tune, but I always think of your mother whenever I hear this. Tamlin from Tricky Pixie's album, Myth Grants.
Holds her petticoats well above her desk.
but young Tamlin will not be found. And Janet's in despair. To the forest floor she falls, and Swift, her lover, catches her. Janet asks Tamlin, my love, why is it in these woods you hide?
The Queen of Fairies stole me, and said, lass, when I was but a child, my lordly sire was a skillful man, and hunting he loved well, but I was prey for the fairy queen. When from my horse I fell, ever since in yon green hill, with the queen I'm bound to dwell. I'd never tire of living there, for the land of fairy does me well. But at the end of 7 years, the queen doth pay a tithe to her, I so fair and fully flesh, and fear 'twill be my sire.
I forbid ye, maidens all, who let fly your lovely hair, to go down to Carterall, for young Tamlin is there. Tonight's the night of Halloween, and the fairy court will ride, and she that would her true love win at Miles Cross must bide. But how shall I thee ken, Tamlin, or how shall I thee know, among a troop of fairy knights, the like I never saw?
First let pass the horses black, and then let pass the brown. Run ye to the milk-white steed, and pull that rider down. They will change me in your arms into a deadly adder, but hold me fast and fear me not, I am the baby's father. They will change me in your arms into a bear or lion bold, but hold me fast and fear me not, I am the father of your child. At last they'll change me in your arms into a naked knight, then cast your mantle over me and keep me out of sight.
Did high the heavens dressed in baleful black, and all was silent as the grave. But Janet waited in the dark, her own true love to save. Betwixt the hour of 12 and 1, the north wind blew and tore and rent. She heard the elfin bridles ring upon the wind where'er it went. Janet stood, mind unmoved, the gloomy heath upon, and louder, louder rang the bells as the fairy court came riding on. And first rode by the night black steeds, and then went by the brown. Then up she ran to the charge of pain, and pulled her lover down. They changed him in her arms to all the beasts and flames and the hateful things, but she did all that her lover bade, and young Tamlin she won. Up then spoke the fairy queen, an angry queen was she. Woe betide the wretch whose tale, the best knight of our company. Had I but known Tamlin, she said, what defeat this night I'd see, I'd have stolen both thine eyes and changed thee fast into a tree. Had I but known Tamlin, she said,